Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
Welcome back to another edition of Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini, alongside Travis Anderson. Always happy to be along with you on the afternoon drive. So much to talk about today. We are going to continue to recap the 2017-2018 high school sports season. Caught up yesterday with Coach Jeff Cincinnatus. Today, we're going to stick with Carbon High School. Over the next 2 days, we're going to stick with Carbon High. We'll be joined by Coach Jim Jukes of the Carbon Track and Field team. Important to talk track and field because Derek Hillam, just a junior, became the state champion in not one but two events at the state championship meet over the weekend. So looking forward to talking with Coach Jukes about that. Also, we're going to be joined by James Holis, who joins us periodically to talk NBA basketball. Last night, LeBron James doing some more work. I mean, this guy has just been incredible. He's putting together one of the most impressive playoff runs that I myself have ever watched. I'm not going to get into the hyperbole talk of the greatest of all time. And this is another thing I want to point out. Just because I say that someone is putting together one of the most impressive playoff runs that I have ever seen, do not take that as me saying he's the greatest basketball player of all time. And I say that specifically to Michael Jordan fans, who can never seem to handle the fact that somebody is performing to a level or even a level higher than MJ performed at during his prime. Because LeBron James has been incredible throughout this postseason. I don't want to hear about the level of competition. I don't want to hear about Boston being down Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving. Because look, at the end of the day, you still have to put the ball in the basket. You still have to prevent the other team from scoring. The fact is, this team was down 2-0 after getting beaten two completely different ways in game one and two, and now this series is tied 2-2. It's a best 2 out of 3 set, and LeBron James once again was incredible last night. I don't want to hear about Michael Jordan. I don't want to hear about Kobe Bryant. I don't want to hear about Magic Johnson. I don't want to hear about any of the other greats. I'm just saying right now, this guy is the best player in the world, and once again, he was outstanding and continues to just impress day in and day out.
Yeah, their back's against the wall at home when two games send this back to a game five. And then you throw all the pressure back on Boston to win that game five. So what LeBron is doing right now is impressive and something that we're never going to see again.
Probably not. I mean, really, this guy is so good at the game of basketball. I've always said he's top six all time. Again, I don't like to get into that legacy talk and all that. But it's funny. I'm looking on social media last night and even on national outlets. We can't just say LeBron James had 44 points and was absolutely outstanding and single-handedly dominated the Boston Celtics last night. We can't say that. We have to say, well, Michael Jordan was so, you know, Michael Jordan went, what, I don't know, 18 of 23 in game six back in 1991. Look, I don't care. I don't care. You don't have to compare greats
just
every single time.
Exactly.
Enjoy the moment. You don't have to compare greats every time another great player does something that's almost, it's mind-boggling how good this guy has been. And you know I'm not a LeBron guy.
No.
I don't particularly care for LeBron. He has been insane, and he was again last night. And if you're a Celtic fan, your hope is probably dwindling at this point.
You should be worried.
You should be worried.
Because you had a chance to go on the road and knock Cleveland out. All you had to do is steal one game on the road, and you're probably going to win this series.
Look,
now, you've lost two.
Travis, it's never happened. It will happen one day, a team falling back 3-0 in a series and coming back and winning. It will happen. The only way that will ever happen is if you have a guy like a LeBron, like a Kobe, like a Jordan on your team.
Yeah.
There were instances in Kobe's career where the Lakers were down 3-0, and I thought, they still have a chance to win the series because they have Kobe Bryant.
Mm-hmm.
I would feel the exact same way about LeBron. And I go back to it. I'm not an I told you so guy, but the year Cleveland beat Golden State, when it was 3-1 Golden State, I remember I said on the show Cleveland will win the series in 7 with Draymond Green going down, and it's because they have LeBron James. Certain players give you faith that they can pull off the improbable. And when you have LeBron, you have a chance to win every single night you touch the floor. You have a chance.
You
got to
bury that guy. And Boston didn't do it.
I don't think you can bury him.
I don't think so.
I really don't.
I picked Cleveland in 7, so I'm sticking with that.
I think there's a good chance that it goes 7. I could see Boston serving home court. I could see Cleveland serving home court, get to game 7. And again, you know, the home court idea at that point in time. Well, game 7, the team, throw it out. Go with the team that has the best player, and that's obviously LeBron James. Let's stick with the NBA. Philadelphia's Ben Simmons and Utah's Donovan Mitchell, unanimous selections to the NBA All-Rookie Team. The two guards received all 100 first-place votes from a panel of sports writers and broadcasters. Jason Tatum was also selected to the first team, falling just one vote short of unanimous. Someone didn't vote for Jason Tatum. Really? Who didn't vote for Jason Tatum?
I'd like
Tatum?
To know who didn't vote for
who
him.
Didn't get there should be three unanimous selections here. Jason Tatum should have been the third one, but he'll take it. 99 out of 100 votes, not bad. Simmons, Mitchell, and Tatum are the three finalists for Rookie of the Year as well. Kyle Kuzma received 93 first-team votes. Well-deserved.
Yes.
A former Utah Ute. Again, I think he came in under the radar. Played fantastic for the Lakers this year. Glad to see Kuzma on the team. And then Lauri Markkanen from the Chicago Bulls gets 76, and that rounds out the first team. Take a look at the second team. Dennis Smith Jr. of Dallas, Lonzo Ball of the Lakers, John Collins of Atlanta, Bogdanovic of the Sacramento Kings, and also Josh Jackson. So there's your second team. Travis, I searched high, I searched low. I didn't see De'Aaron Fox on there.
Yeah, De'Aaron Fox, a guy that everybody said should be, what, in the top three picks. You should take him over Lonzo Ball. You should take him over Dennis Smith Jr. Didn't make the cut.
Didn't make the cut. I wonder why. Look, Lonzo Ball was probably borderline first team. Again, people talk
about...
You didn't watch the game if you don't think that Lonzo Ball is a first or second all-rookie squad player, because he was. He was fantastic. He plays 5 more games, and the Lakers aren't as cautious with his health, and he finishes top 10 in both steals and assists, not for rookies, but in the league. Okay, and we're talking about a teenager here. This kid's a good basketball player, but there was all the talk about De'Aaron Fox, and I, by no way, shape, or form, am I relishing in the fact that De'Aaron Fox did not have a good year for Sacramento. But I think Lonzo Ball...
You got caught up in the hype of the NCAA tournament with...
Right, one game.
What Fox did, yeah.
It was one game, and I think that Lonzo Ball was the center of a lot of criticism that he did not deserve. Maybe his dad, but not him. So I was happy to see De'Aaron Fox. Yeah, I guess I could say that. I was happy to see De'Aaron Fox not on the list for all-rookie, and I was excited to see Lonzo Ball as an all-rookie. Let's take a look at the schedule in Major League Baseball. And no day games, really, throughout the day. We have plenty going on throughout the night. 5 o'clock, the Indians will take on the Cubs. We get the Padres and the Nationals. The Braves will travel to meet the Phillies. The Angels will be at Toronto. We get the Pirates and the Reds. The Marlins at the Mets. The Rays play host to the Red Sox. And the Diamondbacks will travel to meet the Brewers. All of those games in the 5 o'clock hour. 6:05 tonight, we get the Yankees and the Rangers. The Orioles will battle the White Sox. The Twins welcome in the Tigers. And we get the Giants and the Astros. Gerrit Cole, who is 4-1 this year with a 1.7 ERA. That's one of those offseason moves that hasn't really garnered enough attention. World Series champs with Gerrit Cole. He's done work.
Yeah, he's done well since coming over for Pittsburgh.
Been Houston. Better than Keuchel.
Yeah, he has. So the Astros loaded the lineup. You know, if one of those guys like Keuchel's struggling, you're lucky they got Gerrit Cole.
The Royals will take on the Cardinals. Jason Hamill will go up against Luke Weaver in that matchup. Nightcap games, we get the Mariners and the A's and the Dodgers and the Rockies. It's a quick look at what's happening in the national sports front. Again, we have a loaded show for you today. We're going to talk to Coach Jukes of the Carbon Dino Track and Field Squad, and James Holis will join us for an NBA discussion as we talk Eastern and Western Conference playoffs. It's all straight ahead here on this Tuesday edition of the show. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. We will begin with high school baseball, and the All-Region 14 baseball squads have been announced, and the Carbon Dinos were well represented on that list. Carbon senior Cody Lowe was named the most valuable player of the region, while Cesar Lea, Ty Anderson, Zach Bradley, and Nate Olson were all named the first team. The Dinos also had Colin Lewis, Braxton Bennett, and Anthony Jones named the All-Region second team. And yesterday on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, head coach Jeff Cincinnaris was a guest to recap the entire 2018 season. And he started by talking about the team's performance in the state championship tournament, in which they ultimately came up short of a state title, losing to Grantsville in the finale.
We came up a little short there. You know, we work our way back. You know, a lot of things went right for us. A lot of things didn't. We have a six-hour rain delay Saturday morning. End up beating a good Manti team who caught fire at the right time at the end of the season and puts us against Grantsville again. And they just came out and swung a good bat. The first three innings, they were on fire. They jumped on our pitching, and thought Nate Olson, our starter that day, did a great job of just throwing strikes. It's what we asked him to do, and I give Grantsville a lot of credit. They beat us twice.
Cincinnaris continued by talking about how proud he was of his team for advancing to the state championship after claiming the Region 14 title.
You know, we won a successful program. We just finished runner-up in the state. I told my junior class, you know, you have some big shoes to fill, but that's a great group, and they're going to need help from, you know, incoming freshmen, incoming sophomores, whatever it is, in order for us to reach our goals next year.
You can listen to this complete interview with Carbon baseball manager Jeff Cincinnaris by visiting CastleCountryRadio.com and clicking on the Drive Time Sports link. We stick with high school sports, and two Pinnacle Panther student athletes have been recognized for their excellence on the field and also in the classroom. Kaylee Taylor, a senior at Pinnacle High School, was named to the Girls Track and Field Academic All-State Team, as the group of nine girls accumulated a 3.950 GPA. This was the second time that Taylor has earned an academic All-State nod. The first came in cross country this past fall, as the group accumulated a 3.922 GPA. Pinnacle athlete Remington Mott was also named to the Boys Track and Field Academic All-State Team. Mott joins nine other individuals who accumulated a 3.989 GPA. Remington Mott was also named to the Baseball Academic All-State Team in the fall. He was one of 10 for that group as well. Congratulations to those Pinnacle athletes who exceeded both on the field and in the classroom. Registration is currently open for the Price City International Days Golf Tournament, which will take place at the Carbon County Golf Course on Saturday, July 28th, beginning at 8 a.m. The tournament will once again follow the four-person scramble format and have a limit of one person with an 8 handicap or better per team. The cost for this year's tournament is $300 per squad, and that will include green fees, cart, and lunch. Throughout the tournament, participants will have an opportunity to play in several side contests, including a big-screen TV, putting contest, and a $100,000 hole-in-one contest. Plus, you'll receive free items from sponsors at each tee box. All of the proceeds from the tournament will be given to local charities. To register for the tournament, contact TK's Pro Shop at 637-2388. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini. Time for another edition of the Coach's Corner. Of course, we're recapping the 2017-2018 high school sports season. Joining us today is Coach Jim Jukes of the Carbonado Track and Field Squad. Derek Hillam had a huge performance over the weekend. State champion in two events. Both the Carbon boys and girls finished eighth overall. We'll recap the state championship tournament and then talk about the 2018 season as a whole. Coach, a pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Always looking forward to it, Coach, always. We'll start by recapping the state championship tournament, which went down this past weekend at Brigham Young University in Provo. Solid performance from both the boys and the girls. Both finish eight in their, on each side of the track. All in all, how did you assess the way the kids performed?
We did really, really well. I was proud of our kids, the way they fought through the whole meet, the way that they we didn't have a disappointing thing happen at that track meet. It's very, very seldom that you have a meet that you make it all the way through and not have a couple things that fall apart on you. And we really didn't. You know, we got kids in finals where we needed. They performed just great. I was really impressed with the entire group. This is the first time in a long time our boys and girls teams both were able to pull that many points at state at the same time. So as a complete effort as a team, it was amazing.
Well, let's talk about some of the individual performers, and we have to talk about Derek Hillam, who was nothing short of fantastic for you guys. I mean, he wins the 300-meter hurdles and then picks up the win in the long jump as well. Solid performance. To say you're a state champion in two different events, I mean, that's saying something.
It is, you know, and for him, it was really cool because, you know, he was expected to win the long jump. I mean, there was a lot of pressure on him to win that long jump state title because he was number one going into state. He had a little bit of a hiccup at the BYU meet where he just had a bad day and, And we talked about it and worked through it a little bit. And so he was really prepared. And the hurdles was the prelims of the hurdles was the same day as the long jump. And he put in a good jump and then had to go run the prelims. And he ran the prelims and he said, man, I felt pretty good in the prelims. I ran just an easy race to get into the finals. And he came back and won the long jump. And I think that took pressure off of him. Once he won that long jump title, it was like, hey, I'm a state champ. And then the next day in the hurdles, he just said, hey, I'm going to go for it. Hadn't really won a 300 hurdle race all year long. Goes out and wins the state title and surprises a lot of people. Ran an amazing time in doing it. And it hit his ankle on that last hurdle, which banged him up a little bit. And we actually gave him the option to be out of the 4x4 at the end of the meet. And he was about to let his teammates down, and he said, hey, I want to run that 4x4. Went out, ran a great 4x4 to place third in the 4x4 at the end of the meet. And so, I mean, you can't say enough about a kid that's willing to do that and put aside his own accolades to go help a team. And so, I mean, as amazing as it was for him to win that state title in both of those events, it was just as amazing that he didn't take the easy way out. And he went and finished the meet and got his team a third place finish in that 4x4.
And we can talk about some of the kids that have pushed Derek all year long, especially in that long jump. To no surprise, Carson Frame and Carter Fawcett both score points for Carbon in that event.
Yeah, we knew we would have been a little bit surprised if we didn't get all three in the final. It was a little scary there for a little bit. I wasn't sure we're going to get all three in. But the thing is, all three of them return. And so we're going to dominate that long jump again next year. It's going to be really exciting to see. And, Carson has done a lot of good things for us. I mean, he ran a really good hurdle race, pulled some points in the 110 hurdles. And Carter Fawcett pulled some points in the 400. I think he took eighth in the 400. And both of those events for those guys are not things that they particularly like to do, but they'll do it for the team to try to score as many points. And then they were all on that 4x1 with Jalen Dennis that took fifth. I mean, they ran a personal best time in that race and did a lot of really good things for us there. And so I was really impressed. Our 4x4 team had Jared Spenlove that came out of from the distance side over to sprints this year, and he ran a really good leg in that to help us out and get a third place on that.
I know I asked you just a week ago, if I'd have told you at the beginning of the year the boys were going to finish third in region, would you take that? And you laughed and said, absolutely. Eighth place at state. I mean, as far as expectations go, where does that sit?
Sits really well, because the thing is when you look at this new setup with region, the points that separate all the teams is not a whole lot of points. It's just a couple things here and there that need to change, and a couple things that, if we do a little bit better, or if we place kids in different events a little bit, it makes a huge difference. And so we're in that learning curve right now where it's just the first time it's been this way where we actually can kind of plot state and kind of figure out, okay, if we do this with this kid, where's this going to help us? Where's this going to hurt us? We kind of made the decision after region that we wanted to do the best that we could in certain events, and so we didn't necessarily go after a state title. We put ourselves in a position that if somebody stumbled along the way, we might have an opportunity, but nobody stumbled this year. And so next year, though, I think we'll be able to kind of place and strategically go after it a little bit.
Yeah, you're 8 points away from a top five finish this year, and you finished eighth overall. I mean, that should speak volumes to just how close it really was on the guy side.
Right. Well, when you think about it, our guys just doubled the score of what we scored at region last year at state. So that right there is pretty amazing when you think about that. I mean, our guys only put up about 20-some-odd points at region last year, and this year, I mean, they're scoring in the 30s at state. It's an amazing thing and an amazing accomplishment by these boys, what they've done for us this year.
Again, we're being joined right now by Coach Jim Jukes of the Carbondale Track and Field Squad. Coach, let's flip it, talk about the girls. We'll start with Reagan Hansen, logged a third-place finish in the 3,200 meters and again in the 1,600 meters. Had a solid outing and accumulated some points for you guys.
Yeah, Reagan's a great distance runner, and you never know with Reagan how she's going to come out and perform from meet to meet, because distance runners, sometimes they'll feel really good and run really well, and other times if they're not feeling quite right, it shows up. I mean, it's not like in the 100 where it's a couple hundreds. When you multiply that over distance, it can really show up in a big way. And Reagan was feeling it the first day, went out, ran really well, and the second day she came out and responded really well and did it again. 2 meets, that gave her a lot of confidence. I'm really excited about what she was able to do. She's one of those kids that she works harder than anybody. Goes out, runs in fields, she runs all year long and never stops. And it's neat to see a kid see her hard work pay off with some accolades like that, taking third in both events. She's ranked seventh in that 16 and came out, took third, and ran a new PR for her. And and really helped out our girls. On both days, she was the first event on the track that really kind of got us started.
Another girl that's been outstanding for you, not only this year, Coach, but in years past as well, it's Shannon Baker, a third-place finish in the 400, and she also scored some points for you guys in another event, I believe the 200 meters, if memory serves me right. I mean, Shannon has been phenomenal for you guys for years.
Yeah, Shannon's been amazing, and the thing is, you know, Shannon wanted to win that 400 really bad, and but her main goal was to go below a minute. That's been her goal all year, is to get under a minute in the 400. She was able to do that taking third. She ran a 59.88, which was phenomenal time. I mean, all three of those girls that ran that race ran the three fastest times of the year for all three of them. And so she's got nothing to hang her head about. She's been marvelous for us this year. Shannon has just been on top of things, done really well for us. She ran that 200 and took seventh in the 200, and then she turned around in the 4x4 and anchored our 4x4 team and brought us to third in that race with her 400 on the end leg there. And Shannon has just been amazing this year. And that's one of the, I mean, when you flip sides to the girls' side, she's a senior that we're really going to miss, and it's going to be hard to fill that hole.
You do have a lot of youth, though, on this girls' side. And when you talk about Emma Christensen, this is a freshman that scored you points, finished top five in the high jump as a freshman.
She did, you know, and that's the thing with Emma, is Emma's learning a lot. Every time she goes out and jumps, she's showing glimpses of being an excellent, if not one of the best high jumpers that Carbon's ever had. But she's young, and so she's got to learn a few things about, you know, how to manage meets and stuff, and she's getting there. She did a really good job of that, placing fourth. It's the highest I've ever had a freshman place in the high jump at state. And for her to go out and have that kind of thing the first time out, she's going to have, you know, three more years, and she'll be that much better each year. And so she'll have a lot to aim for, and I look forward to seeing what she can do in the next couple of years. And then you also have McKenna Blank as a freshman that goes out and places third in the 800, runs the fastest time any freshman at Carbon High has ever ran. With a 2:22, she wasn't that far off the school record, and that school record's held by her sister-in-law. And so, it's funny that you know, we were talking about how neat it'll be if she can take that record down at some point. But you know, and she helped anchor that 4x4 with, or helped run that 4x4 with Shannon as well. And so we got a lot of youth on this team. You know, we had Harley McGlory that she went out in the shot put and just competed. She ended up in eighth, I think, there, but she's thrown really well. Jody Noyes has thrown really well for us. I mean, and these kids are all underclassmen, you know, and so they're going to be, you know, Jody will be a senior next year, but Harley will only be a junior, and a lot of good things. Mariana Molinar in the javelin goes out as a first-time javelin thrower and as a sophomore and places in the top eight there. And so there's a lot of upside that we're looking at that could be really helpful to us.
As we go into the off season, Coach, and you know, this is just my assessment, is it easier for these kids to prepare for track and field year round than any other sport?
A little bit, but the big thing is that, and when it comes to the off season, I am a really a loud proponent, and some of the coaches might disagree with what I have to say about the off season. I think it's important that the kids jump into multiple sports. I think that cross-training from your sport to another sport, track relates with all the other sports.
Right.
So if they're doing soccer, or if they're doing cross-country, or if they're doing football, or if they're doing whatever it may be, they need to jump into other sports. I'd like to see all of my track athletes be three-sport athletes. With that being said, I think when you get into the summer months, I think it's important, too, for these kids to have some time off. I think it's really important for these kids to have, you know, a month to kind of take some time off of their legs, get recovered and stuff before they start into, you know, camps and all the other stuff that goes along with everything else. I think as coaches, we can push a little too much and have too much effort on these kids when these kids really, they're doing all that they can, you know, and we ask them to be three-sport athletes. We need to understand that they also need some time to recover from seasons, and they need to get going into it. I mean, a lot of these girls on my team were in basketball, came straight from basketball into track, and they haven't had any break. And so I think the next little while they need a little bit of rest. But like I said, I think if a lot of these kids can jump in and become three-sport athletes, that is the ultimate goal. You know, if you're in track, jump into something else in the spring, jump into something, or in the winter, jump into something else in the fall. And that'll make them that much better, because when we get them in track, it's just they're already ready to go.
I know you guys worked to get to the state championship meet, Coach, but when you recap the entire 2018 season as a whole, Your thoughts on it? I mean, what, now that you've had a couple of days to kind of reflect on it, you get a little bit of a break to, you know, take a step back, take a deep breath. How do you assess the entire year as a whole?
I think the one word that there's one word that describes this team that hasn't really been with any other track team I've had, and that's team. I mean, they really have been a team, and they found that out on their own. I think every kid on the team has had a positive experience, and they've really been able to excel at finding out how to help each other out, how to cheer for each other, how to go and do the extra mile. You know, you look at something as small as what Derek Hillam does at State. That was the whole season with most of these kids, is they would put their own things on hold to help the team out in the end. And that's where we've got to shift. You know, with the classification changing that, that's where I see Carbon High's track future going, is we've got to make it a team sport where everybody's pulling their own weight and helping each other out and cheering for each other and doing those things, because we can win a team title. And I think that the kids saw a glimpse of that up at State this year, and they saw it at Region too, that as we meld together as a team, it's a lot better. I think in years past that's been a hard concept because of the classification has been so misaligned, as far as there was no chance of us being in a state conversation. And so I think that that's what I've gained from this year, is we've kind of got a formula now. Now we just need to build on that formula and kind of shift our thinking from individual state titles to team state titles.
Coach, it's always so much fun to get you on and, again, talk about the track and field team. Thank you for always giving us time throughout the year, and congratulations on a very successful 2018 season.
Well, thank you, Jordan. Appreciate it.
Again, that's Coach Jim Jukes of the Carbondale Track and Field Squad, recapping the 2018 track and field season for Carbon High. We've got a break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
With the sixth pick in the 2014 NBA Draft, the Boston Celtics select Marcus Smart from Oklahoma State University.
This is Marcus Smart from the Boston Celtics, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Marcus Smart, what a spin move and a finish! Hard to handle Marcus Smart, whether he's outside or inside the paint.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. We're going to talk NBA basketball tonight. We get the Warriors and the Rockets. Very important game. As close to a must-win situation as possible for the Houston Rockets. We'll talk about that in just a bit. We will recap what happened last night. The Cavaliers draw even with the Celtics with a 111-102 win. And joining us right now to talk about it, we have James Holis of bballbreakdown.com. And of course, you can follow him on Twitter at snottydrippin. James, a pleasure as always to get you on the show, man. Thank you.
Thanks for having me on, man. The day after a bad Celtics loss, I appreciate it.
Yeah. You know, James, for those listeners who don't know, he is a Celtics fan. And I'm sure, James, if we'd have got you on, I don't know, like 4 days ago, you were probably riding a high. Do you still feel confident about the Celtics even after what you have witnessed over the last two games?
I'm going to be honest. I was never confident.
Okay.
I haven't been confident this whole playoff run. I thought they would lose to the Bucks. I thought they would lose to Philly. I was, like, flabbergasted how they were up 2-0 on the Cavs. So even then, it was a cautious optimism. We know that, you know, when a team is up 2-0, almost overwhelmingly they win the series. But I also know that this is a team that's best player is, you know, well, the best offensive player right now is 20 years old. Second best is, you know, 21-year-old. Al Horford, as great as he is as a complimentary piece, he's not some featured guy. And they're playing against LeBron James, who is arguably the best player of all time. So I knew that even up 2-0, nothing was safe, and all of my my greatest fears came to fruition back in Cleveland. I think before the series I called Cavs in 6 or 7, and so like that I'm almost resigned to the fact that I was probably spot on.
Yeah, but look, I mean, being a Celtics fan, and I know that you're looking at things realistic, and I get that, but we also have to look at the fact that this is not a good team. I'm talking about the Celtics, not a good team on the road, at least in the postseason. They have not been good on the road. And the fact remains, they did what they needed to do in games 1 and 2. Cleveland, they did what they needed to do in games 3 and 4. So if you're Boston, you still have control of this series. And I think that's also a realistic way to look at this.
I'm a believer in momentum. I know that usually momentum doesn't carry over game to game, but when you're dealing with a short series, you know, now it's best of three. But, like, right now the Cavs have all the confidence. And I get it. They were playing at home and not going to play on the road. But I think, like, a series evolves. And so games 1 and 2 were the first step in that evolution. 3 and 4, another step. They're not going to go back to step 1 when we get to, you know, game 5. So the Cavs now have a certain amount of familiarity with what Boston does. They have a certain amount of confidence. They saw the ball go in for two games. It's a different ball game now. It's not when they showed up from playing Toronto, who they mentally dominated, to facing this tough Celtics team. And, you know, it was a punch in the face. And they woke up from that punch in the face. So the my point is, like, the fight doesn't reset to square one just because they're back in Boston. This is a whole different thing. So, yes, I expect Boston to play better. They played better last night. Two nights ago. No, yeah, last night. They played better last night. But, I mean, LeBron James was still LeBron James. And Kevin Love played with more confidence. All their guys played with more confidence. So this is having LeBron James, you know, the best player in the series sometimes does matter. I think in this case it might matter. So I'm still cautiously optimistic. But no matter what, I know next season we've got two All-Stars coming back. I'm already kind of looking forward to that. So maybe I'm not as optimistic as I say I am.
Well, when we look at Cleveland, I feel like sometimes I spend way too much time on the show talking about what Cleveland hasn't done right, what's gone wrong for this team. And again, I can look at that and look at some of the, you know, the trade deadline moves that they made. I mean, again, Jordan Clarkson, completely worthless last night, has not been good this entire postseason. Rodney Hood did not even play a single minute last night. Larry Nance is Larry Nance. I mean, he's 3 rebounds, 7 points is what he had last night. But one of the guys that if you look at the box score, James, and you did not watch the game, George Hill's numbers are not going to pop off at you. But he played very composed, and I think at times in this game last night, he was key for the Cleveland Cavaliers. I know LeBron had 44, Tristan Thompson had 13 and 12, Kevin Love flirted with a double-double, I get that. But if you watch the game, George Hill played in control last night. To me, that was a really big deal, something that I noticed in this game.
Absolutely. In the last two games, actually, he was instrumental in them getting off to a hot start in game 3. And last game 4, he had a big he stole a rebound from Terry Rozier, who's a great rebounding guard, and he retained possession. He hit a couple big threes as they were extending that first quarter lead. He you know, when Boston was kind of threatening late, he ISO'd up on Aaron Baines and ended up getting to the rim for a layup. He, you know, same thing. The game was kind of, you know, Boston was trying to battle back into it. He takes Marcus Morris through the hole, gets another foul on Marcus Morris, and scores the and-one. He was absolutely key. Him playing his role, he's best at the role of, I'm going to be the glue guy, and he played that to perfection last night. You know, he didn't score a lot, but he scored when needed. He didn't rebound a lot, but he grabbed the key rebound. So, yeah, he was actually really good last night, and that's my thing. Like, now that these guys have woken up after being, you know, he was a zero in games 1 and 2. Now that he's woken up, it's going to be hard for the Celtics to shove that back into the box. And that's where I'm kind of concerned moving forward.
You did mention Al Horford, games 1 and 2. Look, game 1, he went for, what, 20-6, 20-7, something like that. Game 2, he was 15-10, but he was very efficient in both of those games. What's been the biggest difference that you've noticed from Cleveland defensively or even offensively, some of the ways that they have been able to neutralize Al Horford in games 3 and 4, because he's not been good.
Because I hate that it's been a running Cavaliers joke. They're just playing Tristan Thompson. They're mirroring Tristan Thompson's minutes to Al Horford. And Thompson's physicality and his relative athleticism compared to Al Horford, he really gets into him, and he doesn't give him a lot of airspace to find guys for passes or to get his shot off. So he really neutralizes what Al Horford does so well, spacing the floor, passing from the perimeter and the elbows. He just suffocates him, and he renders him almost neutral. So even last night, I think he had, 15-7? He wasn't great. And so, yeah, Al Horford was like a +2 overall, but, like, I think one of the Cavs guys really enjoys this whole Tristan Thompson, Al Horford thing. He said, like, the Celtics were, like, their net rating was like +53 when Tristan sat, and like a -1 when Tristan was on the court. You know, so all they did was they matched up Tristan's minutes with Al, and Al has to find a way to be effective with Tristan on the floor. And you know, Celtics are already down as far as behind the eight ball in this series because they're dealing with LeBron James. If they have any kind of shot, Al Horford has to be more aggressive and be more effective, even with Tristan on the floor.
Again, we're being joined right now by James Holas of bballbreakdown.com. We'll get some more information from James in just a moment on where you can find more of his work. James, let's shift over to the Western Conference. Tonight we get the Rockets and the Warriors, as close to a must-win situation as you could possibly have without it being an actual must-win situation. Again, I would expect maybe not the same fashion of blowout that we saw in Game 3. I just don't see Houston beating Golden State in Oracle. I just don't.
Yeah, and the one panacea for my glum feelings about the Celtics is I enjoy watching the Rockets get their heads beat in. Their fans and their media guys have been really overbearing all season. And I think, like you said, I think sometimes people overthink this stuff. The Warriors have two MVP caliber guys. They have two All-Stars. And the Rockets have two very high-level All-Stars. One MVP guy and an All-Star. And, like, the talent math just doesn't match up. So, you know, the Rockets do what they do. They're going to shoot a lot of threes, ISO, Chris Paul, and James Harden, but just not enough against a team like Golden State. So, I never thought Rockets really had much of a shot. It was cool that they blew them out in Game 2. But I think me and you are in agreement that the Warriors are just too good for the Rockets. And I think we're going to see tonight, as much as this is a must-win for Houston, they're not going to win. And, you know, you're down 3-1 to the Warriors. You might as well, unless you're getting Iggy suspended and you have LeBron James, it's probably a wrap.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. But speaking of things that Houston has to get done, and I said this at the beginning of the series, in order for Houston to win individual games, this has to be a complete run-and-gun, barn-burner-type game. I'm talking Houston has to score. I said before the series, Houston has to score 125-plus to have a chance to win games. The one game they won, they scored 127. Now, what makes this so difficult is, for as good as Houston is offensively, James, something that does not get talked about enough, Golden State's pretty good defensively.
Yeah, and I'm going to – you're right. Like, it was dope that they scored 120-plus, but it's more key that they keep the physicality on Steph Curry. Like, that's been the thing. They keep games close, or they win when they can keep Steph Curry under wraps, which to me is weird. I always thought Kevin Durant was a better player there, but I think Steph Curry is more important to what Golden State does. But they can't let him get loose, and it's hard. It's easier said than done. Obviously, they did a really good job of it through 2.5 games, and then he had that huge quarter, and the floodgates opened in Golden State. So I'm more concerned. I mean, I guess I'm curious to see. Was that a breakout game for Steph Curry, and now is it, you know, all over but the screaming, or was that just an anomaly? And can the Houston Rockets get him back corralled and get their role players going again? Because we know that's what won them that game, right? PJ Tucker and Eric Gordon having these giant games. If the Warriors can basically shackle everybody else, it doesn't matter if Harden gets 40, right? It doesn't matter if, you know, Chris Paul has a big game. If they can shackle everybody else, they're going to win this one pretty handily.
Well, on top of that, I mean, Chris Paul was not good in Game 3. He was so inefficient. Absolutely. Offensively. So inefficient.
I love it. Because that's Chris Paul's thing, is his efficiency. And he's a very smart player. And he has no real holes in his skill set. But the thing is, when you're a 6'1 point guard with limited athleticism, at some point you're going to reach to a case where it's diminishing returns. Right? Because even as they were getting blown out, he started chipping away and hitting a lot of lows mid-range. And even in game two, game one, when they were getting beat, he scored a lot as they were down big. So it doesn't really matter, But, yeah, Chris Paul's a great player, but I don't know, when you're dealing with a team like the Warriors, is he going to break your back? No. And I don't think he is.
Last question before I let you go. Andre Iguodala, he's questionable for Game 4. I don't know what type of Iggy we get in this game. How much of a factor does that play in the series, if any at all?
I mean, that's a big factor. He's a key part of that death lineup they run out. I refuse to call them the other name that people try to call him. That's a silly name. His versatility, his intelligence, he will make that key defensive play. He'll hit that big shot. He can guard everybody from Chris Paul all the way to, you know, spend a little bit of time if he needs to on Clint Capella. So if he's out of the game, and they're going to be depending on guys like, Kevon Looney, Jordan Bell, these guys are young and they're still ripe and they're so talented, but they don't have the wealth of knowledge that Iguodala has. So, yeah, it's something to look out for. But again, he's not part of that core four. And, you know, the Warriors still should, and that's, you know, it's a big should, unless they let their foot off the gas. The Warriors still should, I think they still should have this next game, if Iggy's not 100%.
James Holis, again, at bballbreakdown.com. James, let us know where we can find more of your work.
Yeah, B-Ball Breakdown. Check us out there on Twitter. I'm at Snotty Drippin. Homage to the great Scottie Pippen. You can also see some of my stuff over at Real Ball Insiders, and I do the Dunk Tales pod with my man Joe Borelli.
Hey, James, it's always a pleasure to get you on and talk some basketball. Thank you again for making time today, and we'll do it again soon.
Thanks a lot, brother. Love having you. Love coming on.
Again, that's James Hollis at bballbreakdown.com. We've got a break for just a moment. We'll come back and put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports when we
You're
return.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Eagles.
We're back to put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Let's talk NFL football. OTAs, they're ongoing. We talked a little bit about this yesterday. We will talk more NFL later on in the week. There's a couple of national sports topics I really want to dig into. Football will be one of them. We'll make sure to bring in Brian Mejia for that conversation. The New York Jets made a trade this afternoon, trading Christian Hackenberg to the Oakland / Las Vegas Raiders for a future draft pick. Never entered a game in two seasons with the Jets, and the reason I want to talk about this is because you follow the Jets extremely close. Hackenberg was highly touted at one time, never even got to play in a single game with the Jets. Does he have untapped potential?
No.
I think he does, Travis.
I don't know if this guy's a quarterback in the league. I really don't. In 2 years, if you can't get on the field with the New York Jets, with the quarterbacks they had on the roster, I just don't see a future for you. So the Jets trade him. The Jets have tons of quarterbacks on their roster. They're going to have to start getting rid of quarterbacks.
They don't need him.
No. So you get a seventh round pick. It's whatever. It does nothing for either team.
Okay, but hear me out here.
Okay.
Does Christian Hackenberg have a legitimate gripe?
Mechanic problems, for
okay,
one.
Okay, so here's this happens after he was critical about the coaching staff, this trade.
Yes.
He made some comments to some reporters, and hours later, he's traded.
He changed his mechanics, too, and the Jets weren't even aware that he changed his mechanics.
Here's what he said. The past two seasons were, quote, frustrating because he didn't, quote, get any information from anybody on how to fix and how to address his mechanical flaws. If you're Christian Hackenberg, again, a kid that was
second-round pick.
He was a second-round pick. I remember when the Jets drafted him, I remember having a conversation about it. A lot of people praised the pick. Thought it was a sneaky pick.
A lot of people thought he should go in the first round.
They did. They did. And it was a string of picks. Remember, the Jets went with Geno Smith in the second round as well.
Yes, they did.
Okay, so they
get the year before.
I think it was
it?
The year before, yeah. If I'm not mistaken. Okay, so you take Hackenberg with that pick. Now, he's not going to play in Oakland because you have Derek Carr. But to me, this is a really low risk, high reward for the Raiders. And I kind of lean on you here because I do not know as much about the New York Jets as you do, front to back. But when I look at Hackenberg, I see untapped potential. I can't make a fair assessment on Hackenberg because guess what? I'm not at the New York Jet practices. I've seen him in preseason, never seen him play in a single game of the regular season. And knowing what I know of him in college, I don't know that this kid can be a legitimate starting quarterback in the NFL. But for as bad as the Jets were, why the hell didn't they give this kid some run?
Yeah, you should have seen what you had in him, but they just never felt that he practiced well. He missed a lot of throws in practice. I guess the preseason reps they weren't happy with. So there's just a lot of things that went into why he didn't play because the Jets kept saying he's just not ready. And if you go and read quotes from players and stuff, they just said the kid is just not a quarterback in the league. Practice-wise, he's not good.
So the coaching staff never felt that they could ever give him the opportunity to lead the offense, even though the Jets have played in some very meaningless football games in 2016, 2017. Mm-hmm. I think maybe a change of scenery is good on both fronts.
Yeah, I hope it works out for him. I really do. But just, you know, following the team, reading stuff from the team, they just said that the kid just doesn't have it.
He was given a chance to win the job last year.
And didn't.
42 of 74, so completed 57% of his passes, 370 yards, two touchdowns, two picks, nine sacks. Without Hackenberg, the Jets are now down to three quarterbacks, Darnold, McCown, and Teddy Bridgewater. Obviously, this guy's not going to play above any of those individuals that I just named. But again, I think that there may be some untapped potential there, and I think it's very low risk, high reward for the Raiders. I really do. Maybe you have a backup now in Christian Hackenberg.
Yeah, and if he turns out to be something for the Raiders, then you can flip him for a third or fourth or a fifth or whatever it is.
Out of time on the show today. Again, I want to thank James Hollis and, of course, Jim Jukes for taking out the time to join us. Tomorrow, I want to talk about the Belmont Stakes because we are in the midst of potentially having a Triple Crown winner in Justify. So we're going to bring in Steve Bordstein, great friend of mine. Let the hype build and begin because it's not until June 9th. And so, of course, media outlets are going to be following Justify very closely over the next few weeks. So we'll talk some horse racing on the show. We'll also recap the Kerbin High School softball season with Coach Wade Williams. That'll be on the show tomorrow. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. We are out.